Hello and welcome to Broken Yoke Shadowplay podcast number one. My name's Tom and I am one of sort of four people running the Broken Yoke Club Nights in Dalston. And we're just kicking off what will hopefully be a series of recordings, introducing our nights, dealing with a few issues that we're interested in, hopefully you are, in music, and just generally bringing you a lot of good tunes. Alongside me from Shadowplay is Alex. I'll just pass you over to him.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I'm Alex from Shadowplay. That's a fanzine that I've been running for a while from both Nottingham and Sheffield, covering a sort of wide range of music. And Tom and I sort of unite over, one, a journalism degree, and two, a sort of geeky partnership in music, I suppose. But also I'm interested in Broken Yoke because it does have this sort of alternate edge, and it brings what maybe you can't find elsewhere in London. And as one of the sort of founders of it, Tom, what do you think the Broken Yoke sort of brings that people can't find elsewhere?
Well, hopefully it consistently, week on week, brings music which we've never had before, and which isn't being played in a lot of the venues. I mean, I live in sort of Stoke Newington, and there aren't that many gigs that I hear about that aren't rock or indie or reasonably electronic bands playing here. So we're trying to bring in a little bit more African music or people that play instruments that you don't tend to see, something like that. I mean, I've just realised that there is Cafe Otto doing a lot of other stuff, so I don't want to discredit them. But we're going for a fun, lively, high-pressure sort of night that every sort of Thursday, once a month, people can just get down and have a good dance and then have DJs playing good tunes all night, really, and hopefully filling a gap.
Just sort of quick question on that. I mean, obviously we're in London, one of the biggest cities in the world, one of the most renowned for music. You've got to think that if you struggle to find things here, do you think that it's just because there aren't enough outlets for that kind of music? Do you think it's because music has been drawn down a certain path? You know, obviously indie rock, or dance music makes a lot more money. Do you think it's down to the DIY producers? Is it up to them to bring that kind of, I mean, obviously we're trailing up to an Afrobeat night. Is that so niche that it has to be DIY?
Don't think it has to be DIY because it's so niche. In fact, I know that Cargo and a lot of places across the city are putting on really big names, but they cost more money, and those same venues aren't consistently putting on those things, so that you know that on the first week of every month you can go back and you enjoyed it last time. You know that those promoters are putting on something that you like, so you can probably turn up and you may well have not heard of it, but you can sort of trust the night, you know, hopefully people can come along. And I don't think that there is a shortage. I think that there's a hell of a lot of music being played across London, but it's a hell of a big place, and I know that I don't midweek always want to travel to lots and lots of different venues, and as I was saying, either pay a really high price or, well, you know, or just, as I say, the distance, you know. I like the idea that people from this area get to know the music and they can just come down whenever they like.
Well, shall we kick off with our first tune and get people in the mood?
Yeah, okay. What do you want to play?
What's it going to be? I'm in the mood for Scar by Lord Chirano.
Yeah. I tried to pass the baton over there, but we both love it. It's probably just my scrawled handwriting that means that Alex doesn't know anything that I give him. And he probably would have said it's bye, I'm in the mood for Scar. Let's roll this one in.
Because you're near me, funny, but when you're near me, I'm in the mood for love. Heaven is to think of weather. If you could dream my bed, we put our hearts together. Now we are one, I'm not afraid. If there's a cloud above, if it should rain, we let it. Hope for tonight, forget it. I'm in the mood for love.
Tonomo, we established that I'm going to have to make an early on in the series correction because I'd managed to miss out the Mighty Passing Clouds, which does actually do fantastic reggae and world music nights in the area, as does the Vortex and probably lots of other places that I'm diplomatically trying to add in.
But yeah, so we are promoting the Broken Yoke nights that happen in Dalston each month, and Tom's going to tell you a little bit about how it all came into being. Tom, how did it start and when?
I think probably the main reason it started was because all four of us just really wanted to put on Acoustic Ladyland. All in love with the band, and we'd got one guy, Joe, who does a lot of gigs, and sort of without wanting to sound like we're doing it for Step Up the Ladder, I mean, the chance for his band to be able to play with Acoustic Ladyland on that night was just...
And what are they called, Tom?
They're called Ground Dust, and yeah, they're a great bunch of guys. Got two brothers who managed to perfectly match harmonies without even having to play a note, which is pretty damn impressive. And then they've got another singer who can actually go higher than both of those are doing and add another layer to it while also playing a chaos pad and cutting tunes in and out, fiddling around with them. Sort of putting effects over their sounds, and then they're great. They're all very, very good. They deserve to play with Acoustic Ladyland, in fact. It started because we wanted to put them on, really. But it wasn't just that. I mean, it happened to start that particular week of that particular month because we all wanted to put on that band and decided on it. But it was something that we'd all been erring towards for a long time, and just came up well with Bardens because it's a nice basement venue, sort of wooden, a bit dark, sort of scruffy, but at the same time, well, no, it is scruffy, but it's a nice place to go to. Mm-hmm. And the guy just sort of gave us a great offer in the sense that we don't have to pay a penny, we do it, bring the people in, and then he takes a cut. So, you know, it's ideal, which is much better than a lot of the offers that we've looked at since when we've been thinking about putting on bigger acts in bigger places.
And what's the first thing you sort of have to overcome in that? I mean, obviously you don't have to pay for the venue, which is great. That's not always something that people have to deal with. But how about the sort of promotion side and sort of bigging it up? Because obviously it was ram-packed on the opening night, and that's exactly what you want to see.
Well, it depends on the city, I think. I mean, I used to live in Sheffield, and I used to be part of the student community. There are much fewer venues than you've got in London, so in a sense there, if you spread the word between your mates, partly because they're all students, so they could just Skype and come in on it and stay up late anyway, but you know, that you know you'd get a decent turnout, and because it was a small enough city, if you just flyered outside the nights leading up to it, then you could probably get people down, get it on a few websites and you're laughing.
Yeah, definitely.
London is just a whole different ballgame, really. And I think that it all centres around Time Out. And on the first night, we got a recommendation from Time Out. And I think that probably massively helped. I think the fact that Acoustic Ladyland have got a big following in London, probably dedicated people that come out to see them a lot.
Because that hook, you know, from your main sort of promoter and also from a band, you know, that name in the press already?
They're a funny one because they're always in the press, but they've sort of been so good for so long that there isn't really a massive buzz about them. Whereas Plugs, who we had supporting, do have a big buzz about them, and I think that was another really good factor that we had two different types of bands on, both that were quite different, but I think if you were a music fan, then I think from both sides, people that like Plugs were kind of like blown away by seeing someone on a saxophone bending over and craning around like he was Zest playing rock jazz, and then for all of the people that knew exactly what they were expecting but loved it, they saw genre. Well, Plugs do sort of slightly electro with their synth lines, pop really, and I can't imagine that that's the first sort of type of genre that Acoustic Ladyland fans would have gone to.
Yeah.
So for them,
it's about that diversity. Give me something different, even within the same build.
Yeah. And it was great just to see everybody loving it. I mean, saying that, nobody had a name badge saying who they come to see. I think probably just being stereotypical, thinking that like the older people.
I've seen some great gigs where people ask you on the door who have you come to see, and they have a little tally chart, and I guess that band gets to come back to that venue next time. You know, it's a rating system, but maybe Broken Yoke should consider that for next time.
I don't think so.
You're not going to rate them like that. Well, there's my idea of playing out the wall.
Well, it's just a little bit unfair.
Well, then. Sure, maybe you should ask them at the end of the night. Maybe that's fair after they've seen the band.
But we could do a vote. We could see who gets to play an encore right at the end.
It's all getting a bit X Factor, I think, Tom, isn't it? Shall we see what Acoustic Ladyland sound like?
Yeah, cool. Let's play one of their bangers, one of their most popular ones. It's a tribute to Iggy Pop, and it's called Iggy.
Excellent. Was Acoustic Ladyland with Iggy, a tribute to who are one of my favourite 70s idols, and I once even pretended to be Iggy Pop's son to try and blag into a Hungarian hotel to Yeah, it was because he was playing at a festival that I went to see, and Iggy Pop was in the hotel, so I went in my flip flops and shorts. I'd just been swimming, and said, I'm Junior Pop, and or they said no. I said I'm Junior Osterberg, and then I had to leave. So they asked me to leave. Yes. Anyway, so that was Acoustic Ladyland. Excellent stuff. So one of the things about this podcast is that we want to have a podcast for people who enjoy music and people who enjoy new music, and sort of deal with the way people consume the various sort of different elements of it now. And also, we're sort of journalists by trade and also by interest. And one of the things we sort of want to deal with is the kind of gatekeeper effect that used to exist, whereby the music journalists would almost dictate what people consumed or what people read about, and often sort of define music trends. Now, the internet has changed this. I mean, Tom, from your sort of experience, how have you found the internet impact on which artists you discover and whether that even impacts at all from the media anymore?
Well, I mean, the internet was actually hugely influential for what I got into, because I was lucky enough to have a computer in my room when I was the only kid in my house when I was growing up. And so, you know, I'd go out and I'd hear music, or I'd hear people play music and just say a name, and, you know, I might hear sort of Ninja Tune hip hop or something at like the age of 16 and just think, wow, I mean, this is amazing. So I could go out, I did not go out, I sat in my chair and
it's the
exact opposite, and search for all of it, and then, you know, I could get hold of it. And I think that's hugely different than what almost a lot of those hip hop artists would have been used to, in a way, because that stuff would have been pretty hard to get hold of for a long time. But I think that over time, as that's become more common, it seems like you were saying about the gatekeeper effect. I mean, even then, I would spend a lot of time reading music magazines and reading music websites, which I'd then have a lot of respect for their opinion and go out and get it. And it really seems now like the market is so heavily proliferated with everything you can possibly imagine that it's quite hard to make decisions about it. And I think that's partly from myself getting into more and more genres. And I think that it would be easy if you were a fan of just electro house, and then you just looked for all of those releases, and that would be fairly easy, but the matter of the fact is that people aren't like that now, and that's changed.
I think exactly you're right there, but that even if you were into, say, electro house or something, because the internet is so easily available, you hear a name, you don't have to go out and buy a record to suddenly start listening to a certain genre and realize that actually you do like that, and that is a very positive element that you can sort of broaden your horizons in that sense. I mean, one extra element that we were sort of talking about is obviously downloading and piracy and that sort of thing. That's a whole different sort of kettle of fish, to use a very cliche, in fact. But something that we've seen fairly recently is Spotify, and I think you and I differ on our sort of opinions on this. What's your sort of view on Spotify?
Well, okay, I love it in the extent that I can just think, I really want to hear that classic tune, and I don't actually own it. So, brilliant, I'll put it on, and Sexual Healing, here we go. But actually, I do own that. That would be a terrible thing to say on a podcast, but you know what I mean, that's what I'm getting at. So I think it's great. But I also have always felt that music is an escape form for me from what I almost dislike about the world, and I don't want to be suddenly intruded by a Sky Sports advert going on about the new football season when I was right in the middle of some Louis Armstrong with a glass of wine and getting really cosy and into what I was doing. And then bam, suddenly the volume comes up and it's all kicking off, and I'm thinking, oh my god, but then it's free.
So that's the sort of qualifying factor in this, I guess. Obviously, point out this point that there is a subscription to Spotify whereby you cannot have the adverts, but I guess that's more aimed at sort of bars and clubs who want to play a continuous sort of loop than you at home, who if you're looking at that kind of thing, probably aren't prepared to pay? What do you think?
I could imagine that for a lot of people, perhaps people that are sort of over 30 or something, that which it seems that the over 30s and the people that have got a little bit more settled and slightly less sociable social lives or less sociable spare time get more into the technological things than some, not all obviously, of the young people do, because it's fun, and you know, they can get really into like Apple products and things like that in a way that when
maybe have more time to research these things, and you know, if you're that way inclined as it were, then
it's a good excuse to escape from the wife or something, and pop upstairs and go and geek it up for a little while, you know. Whereas, like, if you're completely broke and you're a young person that's probably working a lot longer hours, really, because you tend to at that age, because you're constantly trying to sort of pick yourself up.
Sure.
Anyway, long and short of it is, I reckon people like that would pay for it. I think that personally, as with a lot of people, really like actually owning things and have quite a lot of pride in owning things, and I've now take pride in owning my MP3s, even though, you know, it's nowhere near the same as owning it on vinyl. But actually, I do, and I also mix using MP3s and using vinyl. So Spotify, you know, it might as well be YouTube, because I can't bring that in and I can't change it and I can't do anything with it. So I wouldn't spend any money on Spotify because I can't use it for what I want to.
I guess from sort of bring my sort of side of the coin on this is that as someone who's merely a consumer and not a DJ and not someone who sort of uses it as you were, and I would add that you can sort of do playlists and stuff on Spotify, which means you can keep it to a point. I don't mind the adverts because I sort of see that as my penance. You know, this is something that I've grown up having to pay for. So if I have to deal with the advert, then so be it. They're providing an excellent service. And also remember that I suppose a lot of the magazines we read and a lot of the websites we read to tip us off about music have adverts at the side. The only difference about that is that they're music adverts rather than, as you say, Sky Sports or exactly. So something you sort of equally wouldn't want to consume, but it's an interesting element to it. I mean, sort of bringing things back to that gatekeeper effect, what role does the sort of media play in the print works now? Because obviously we've seen a lot of movement towards online magazines, far less paid for magazines, but also a boom in free magazines as we've seen over the last few years. Why do you think that sort of stemmed?
Why do I think there's been more?
Yeah, why do you think there's been more free magazines for a start? Because obviously they're funded by advertisers. But there definitely seems to be an upshoot in interest in publishing free magazines.
Well, maybe, I mean, off the top of my head, but if you can just illegally download a tune completely for free, and then you've got it and you just listen to it and you make up your own mind whether you don't like it, then you're probably not going to want to go and spend £4 on a magazine which tells you that they like it when you could just make your mind up for free.
Right.
I mean, and also the good thing about the internet is that you can just go and listen to it, so they can stream it on there. So you don't have to just have a piece of paper and then think, man, I wish I could actually hear that, because you're just a click away from it, and so you're in the right place. Also, you've got access to loads of other things, like you've got videos and you've got mixes and stuff like that, and it's just a bit of a richer environment for people. And I think also, I would imagine that increasingly people are reading on the internet. That's when they do those sorts of things, and they probably less frequently actually just sit down on a bed with a magazine.
So I guess the other side of that, how as sort of music consumers do we deal with the massive proliferation of music that's out there? You know, how can we wade through that when suddenly all this is open to, you know, if I want to say click on the Mac that we're recording this on now and find some music from Ohio, I could do it within 20 seconds. How do we deal with that, do you think?
I don't think it's changing that much really, because I mean, I think there's a hell of a lot more music out there, but I think that all people want is something that they can trust. You don't want to mess about going to websites that you've never heard of and seeing what they think of a tune. And well, what I'm saying is, if you went to just a website that you've never heard of and then they say some album is absolutely amazing, and then you listen to it and you think it's rubbish, then you're not going to go back. And so trusted brands that you can, you know, you're not going to waste your time if you do listen to them are still as important as ever. It's just on the internet. What the proliferation thing is that the amount of content that they turn over is just phenomenal, because they're not working on a monthly, bi-monthly basis. They're working on a daily basis. So, you know, you go on one day and there's 10 new things to read and you think, oh, I was just browsing that between like a phone call. I'm just Skyping a bit of work. Or I haven't got time to read. And another thing, normally really badly edited, loads of typos and a hugely long interview. I think, well, I'd quite like to give that time.
Yeah.
And you go on a day later and it's buried and you think, well, I'm not going to read that because there's all this new stuff on
there. Yeah, of course.
And it's just constantly coming at you. It almost feels, as somebody that would like to feel on top of it and a bit like a collector, that you're snowed under.
Who's going to play us out now then, Tom, as we tearfully say our goodbyes?
We're going to roll out with Stop That Train by Peter Tosh and Bob Marley. I think it was originally on Catch Fire, but this is a great version. So, yeah, thanks for listening.
Stop the train.